This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.
I didn't have a good role model or someone to say, here's a different perspective on it all. And instead, I so hated this part of myself, and I was going through puberty and trying to stop it at the same time.
This is Death, Sex, and Money.
I am a millionaire. It's a weird thing to hear, right?
The show from WNYC about the things we think about a lot.
She can't be dead.
And need to talk about more.
He will not leave me alone. He thinks I am his love goddess.
I'm Anna Sale. When Daniel K. Isaac landed his role as a hedge fund analyst on the Showtime show Billions, he didn't have to go far to learn about people who work on Wall Street. He was already waiting their tables.
It was a steakhouse in the basement of a building that had a lot of finance folks in there.
Oh,
and,
really?
And they started recognizing me a little, but mostly the show. And then I was sort of unable to do my job as they wanted to talk more than they would to their server. And and I could be like, help me understand this thing that I don't.
The jargon in the show.
Yeah. But even now I'm sort of like, it's fun to get to learn about that world.
When he was young, Daniel's world was very different. He was raised by a single mom in Koreatown in Los Angeles. They didn't have much money. He also didn't have a lot of friends his own age.
I'd skipped the second grade and started school early, something such that I was always 2 years younger than my peers. And so that always sort of offset me from the people I was around. And I think that probably relates to always feeling older or wanting to be older.
His mom immigrated from South Korea in the 1980s and is a devout Christian. They spent a lot of time in church when Daniel was growing up.
The one I was born into was the one my mom and biological dad got married in. And I would later find out pretty recently, a couple years ago, that my biological father cheated on my mother with the head pastor's daughter. And that affair became public, and that's the reason why he left my mom. But my mom continued to go to that church once a week so that I could see him once a week. That was the arrangement that she had created for me to have some point of contact with him until she tried remarrying for a short spell when I was in fifth grade. And that's what led us to move and my mom to find another church, which I would like to think was better for her so that she's not going to the point of such gossip and, you know, abuse in a way, at least emotionally.
When did you start to get the sense that you are gay?
I was dial-up internet researching porn.
Uh-huh.
So whatever that was, 10, 11, 12, somewhere around there. I just remember looking at pornography and then going towards the gay sections and thinking, oh, this is where I would rather be. And that, I guess, almost applied a label to it. But it wasn't until, you know, kids made fun of each other or bullied each other or there was this fear of being labeled gay that I put that upon myself. So it was pretty early.
Who did you tell?
I didn't tell anyone at first. And then I remember one of my first best friends in high school also had a single mom. And he came over to, and we were on my computer and he was looking something up. And I didn't know how to delete browser history yet. And it was gay browser history that came up as he was typing in some website. And that became the point in which that was our access to each other, that we could sort of come out to each other. And he lived a block away and we were both in water polo and swimming together. And so then we became these closeted kids together. And then I would eventually tell people at church and I would voluntarily go through conversion therapy with them. And while I was doing that therapy, in big quotes, I came out to my mother under the pretense that that I was fighting it, that it was a sin, it was a choice, and I was already taking the steps to ensure that I wouldn't be that for the rest of my life.
Daniel spent 3 years in conversion therapy until he finished high school at 16 and left home to go to college in San Diego. He decided to study theater and found a supportive group of gay friends away at school. Pretty soon, he decided he was done trying to fight his sexuality, and he came out to his mom again.
And she was very upset and disowned me, quote unquote, because I told her I didn't consider this a sin anymore. Whether or not I even fully believed that at the time, I didn't want to do it. And I was doing a show at the time, and I remember she still came to it and paraded this sort of image of a supporting and lovely mother and brought flowers. And she was wonderful in public. And the moment we were alone, I remember, pulled out a Bible that was covered in Post-its, and each Post-it was marking where I had sinned or committed a sin, whether it was obeying your parents or, of course, issues relating to homosexuality or passages about bestiality or pedophilia or whatever. And I just remember this Bible of Post-it notes, and we had this sort of screaming fight where she officially disowned me, and I lived in a dorm with 8 or 9 other guys, and they were, a lot of them were home and sort of heard it, and I kind of like rubbed my back as I was crying or something, and then I just had to like figure it out, and I went to financial aid and was like, I've been disowned for being gay, and they were like, fill out this paperwork, and here's a therapist that you should go see, and.
Your financial aid office had a referral for a therapist?
They were like, we highly encourage or it is mandatory to go into therapy. Whatever it was, it put me into therapy at the time. And I'm so thankful for that and for that, for those sessions during that time.
And when you say disown your mother, you had no financial support from your mother.
No.
At that point.
The only thing that she did do, which was a clue for me at the time, was she continued to pay for my cell phone bill. Like, she and I were on a family plan, and while tuition and my life expenses I would figure out on my own from 16 onwards, the cell phone she did continue to pay until I could afford it. And so while I had been disowned, it always never felt like an option that we would never be a part of each other's lives. And she still hopes I'll come around. And, I'm not leading her on into believing that that will happen anytime soon. But we try to relate to each other in other ways.
Have you and your mom talked about that fight with the Post-its since?
Yeah, we've acknowledged it. It's something that just always comes up. You know, she's a single parent and I'm an only child, and we are essentially each other's only family. And yet fundamentally, we are in disagreement about this one thing regarding sexuality and faith. And
who you are.
Yeah, yeah, right. And she likes to joke about it now or fight about it. And I sort of have to take it in stride. And that first therapist was very good about of laying out, you can either be black, white, or gray about this. You can have your life in which you are this out and proud homosexual who doesn't have a relationship with your mother because she is so fundamentally against this aspect of yourself. You can be on the opposite spectrum where you either go back in the closet or you do choose to, quote unquote, fight this thing and appease your mother and have a relationship with her that way. Or you can find some sort of gray middle ground in which it requires perhaps more compromise from you as the child. And so I opted for this slightly trickier, but sometimes very funny and weird relationship with my mother that takes a lot out of me at times. This isn't some like... easy, enlightened exercise. It is a constant negotiation.
Gray is hard.
Yes, gray is hard. Yes.
Coming up, what Daniel isn't willing to compromise on as both he and his mom get older.
I hope to be able to adopt and have a kid or two and be able to have, you know, the different family unit than I was raised to believe was right or whole or good. I won't let her perspective deter me from it.
It's Katie, one of the producers here at the show. This conversation with Daniel K. Isaac was recorded right before Anna went out on maternity leave. And since it's been a couple of months now since Anna gave birth to her beautiful baby girl, Eve, we thought it was about time that we checked in with her to see how things are going.
Hello.
Hi. How was leave?
It's been really nice. It's been like such a gift to get to be home, not just with this new little baby, but also with her big sister.
Anna's got a 2-year-old at home, in addition to her newborn. And I was curious about what she's been enjoying in the few precious moments of free time that she does have.
I've gotten back into exercising, and so I'm catching up on some of the podcast series that I missed. And right now I'm listening to the startup season about charter schools, which I've found to be really interesting and complicated. I'm really loving High Maintenance in Broad City right now. And I think it's just sort of like, I don't know, it's like my New York City alter ego getting its fix.
Yeah. And you mentioned you have started exercising again. Like, what type of exercise are you getting into?
I am running and jogging, you know, sometimes faster and sometimes slower.
I don't know if you're taking Eve on the runs with you or not, but I found in maternity leave, like, just having a, you know, a half hour here or there to get out and exercise just kind of like gave me some headspace.
Yeah, yeah. I go on walks with Eve, but when I'm exercising, I'm trying to keep it a kid-free zone just for 30 minutes, which takes a lot of planning, but
yes.
It's worth it.
Anna will be back in just a few more months, and in a few weeks, we'll announce who's going to be filling in until then. Listen out for that announcement coming your way soon.
This episode is brought to you by Fail Better, David Duchovny's new podcast with Lemonada Media. On Fail Better, David, who has experienced both low and high profile failures throughout his life, explores the vast world of failure, how it holds us back, propels us forward, and ultimately shapes our lives. Each week, he will chat with guests like Ben Stiller, Bette Midler, and more about how our perceived failures have actually been our biggest catalysts for growth, revelation, and even healing. Through these conversations, he hopes listeners can learn how to embrace the opportunity of failure and fail better together. Fail Better is out now wherever you get your podcasts. We have had a lot of exciting new things to share with you about the show recently, but this might be some of our biggest news yet. Death, Sex, and Money is officially going to be live in New York City at the Tribeca Festival on June 11th. And I want to personally invite you to the live taping we'll be doing with the legendary journalist Kara Swisher. If you know Kara's work, you know her ability to get people to tell her things is unmatched. And she does it in her signature, hard-charging way. She's not afraid of things getting a little combustible. I have a slightly different interview style, so we're going to talk about that and play around with that in experimental ways that I think will make this a special show unlike any of our other live shows up to this point. And it's not often that I get to do a live Death, Sex, and Money show in New York, so I really hope to see you there. Whether you're in the city, on the East Coast, or just been looking for a reason to visit New York City, come on June 11th for this show. You can get tickets now at tribecafilm.com/deathsexmoney. We are so excited to see you there.
I'm Shankar Vedantam, here to tell you about a great mystery. That mystery is you. As the host of a podcast called Hidden Brain, I explore big questions about what it means to be human. Questions like, where do our emotions come from? Why do so many of us feel overwhelmed by modern life? How can we better understand the people around us? Discover your hidden brain. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So, first it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotterucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
It would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights.
Gay rights now! Gay rights!
With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
And activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.
This is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC. I'm Anna Sale. When Daniel K. Isaac moved to New York to become an actor, he worked a series of what he called survival jobs for 8 years. He was a waiter, a personal assistant, a bartender, a caterer. He was only able to quit his last restaurant job 2 years ago, and he still lives modestly.
I have a roommate. I'm in Astoria, in the same apartment I found when I first moved here, almost 10 years ago. Yeah. I met a guy at a club who was moving to L.A., and he probably wanted to go out, and I just wanted his apartment, and I got it.
And how old were you when you arrived in New York City?
20. And I was gifted a, on my 18th birthday, my friend Jin gave me his driver's license so that I could be over 21 for bars and clubs because he was Korean American as well. And then
and that was enough. That was enough for the bouncers.
That was enough. It actually got worse because it expired almost right before I moved. And so my other friend, Al Evangelista, who wasn't even Korean American, he was Filipino American, he gave me his ID. And that's how I made it to 21 before I was actually 21 in New York City. And he and I look nothing alike. And yet I would just make sure I didn't have an Asian or Asian American bouncer. And I would be fine. I was completely fine.
What was your dating life like in your 20s, when all of a sudden you're across the country from your mother, you are proud to be gay? What was it like?
I think the pride thing is or at least was a constant negotiation for a while. But I fell in love very quickly with someone who then had to move to France to teach English. And then I dated a guy who was in the closet for the period of our 2 or 3 year relationship. And that also felt like a compromise, I think, in that I was trying to live my truth, my pride, my shameless self. And he wasn't quite there, and yet I stuck with that relationship for a while.
That must have been hard.
Yeah, I think I think gay people are warned not to date someone in the closet, and I didn't listen. And
would you go out in public together?
We would. The rule I made was that he couldn't be closeted in my world. But what that ended up doing was sort of segmenting our lives. I had my friend circle and he had his. And when he entered mine, he could be perhaps more true, in at least in that aspect of his identity. And then when he was in his world, I participated as a friend and at one point a roommate. And that wasn't exactly the best truth to be living for either of us. And I think I'm still, you know, I'm just searching for what is the best match or pairing, whether it's for marriage or children. And that will be sort of my next act of rebellion or act of truth, in being able to create a family unit that is so against what my mother and my upbringing could ever possibly imagine.
Have you talked to your mom about wanting to be a parent?
Oh, yeah. I have a friend that I met right before I moved out here, B.D. Wong. When I first moved to the city, he would host these Saturday night dinners with his son and his friend group that are family. And my mother came to town once, and he invited her as a way for her to see this definitely not heteronormative family unit that was full of joy and love. And while B.D. was divorced from the other father of his son, here they were creating family and friendship and fostering love. And she came and witnessed that and stayed very, very silent through the entire evening, you know, and maybe we did dishes together or something at one point. And she said, I feel so bad for that kid because he has to be raised in that family unit. She didn't see any of the joy. She didn't see any of the light or the love. And she felt such extreme sorrow at what I had found such beauty in. And that was very hard for me to navigate. And, you know, when the, like, It Gets Better campaign came out, I've always heard, you know, it'll get better when you are married. And I've also heard it'll get better when you, or if you want to have grandkids for her. And that was sort of the demonstration that maybe it wouldn't get better. You know, like that phrase has never really worked for me because I don't think she would at least, you know, in who she is today and what she has said, she wouldn't participate in that family unit.
Have you had periods where when your mother is honest with you about those strict lines for her, mm-hmm. where it has felt actually too hard to have a close relationship with her, to have her in your life?
Yeah, if the phone calls ever got too hard once I was living in New York, I would just not call her or you know, pretend I was busy. And it wasn't until my friends that I'd meet up with after a phone call, and I'd be like, my mother just said this, or like, I'm really upset right now because this is what just happened. And oftentimes they would laugh, and it was their laughter and their perspective on the absurdity or the inadvertent comedy of it all. It wasn't until I could witness this other perspective and experience how other people related to my relationship with my mother that it actually helped me re-engage with her and find more compassion or love for her. And there are times where if I'm going through something hard, I have actually said to my mother, I need you to be a human mother to your son right now, and try at least for a tiny period of time to relate to me in that way and not through any religious filter. I just need my mother, and she can do that for maybe 2.5 minutes, and and I will take them. You know, like in my most recent breakup, I was like, you know, this is sad. This is what I'm going through. And she was like, yeah, you know, 4.5 years is a long time. I can see how that could hurt. You know, take care of yourself. Go eat something warm. You know, when your father left me, I had a hard time too. And that's enough, I guess. You know, like that's what I can hold on to. And then, you know, after 2.5 minutes, it turns into, but you're actually taking a step closer to God, and it's all for the best. And this is all part of God's greater plan for you to become a Christian. And so, you know, I just edit. I'll take that 2 minutes.
That's actor Daniel K. Isaac. The new season of Billions started just this past weekend. You can watch it on Showtime. Death, Sex, and Money is a listener-supported production of WNYC Studios in New York. I'm based at the studios of the investigative podcast Reveal in Emeryville, California. Our team includes Katie Bishop, Annabelle Bacon, Stephanie Joyce, Emily Botine, and Andrew Dunn. Thanks to Keegan Zima for his help on this episode. The Reverend John Delore and Steve Lewis wrote our theme music. I'm on Twitter at Anna Sale. The show is at Death Sex Money on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. And email us anytime at deathsexmoney@wnyc.org. After Daniel's first serious boyfriend in New York moved to France, he started dating again and soon discovered he might have a type.
I would then fall in love with someone who moved to China for work, and the guy after that moved to Germany for a year. And so I remember one wedding speech I gave where I was like, if you want to have an international chapter in your life, gentlemen, date me, and something about me will send you to the other side of the world for you to pursue your passions there.
I'm Anna Sale, and this is Death, Sex, and Money from WNYC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Coming soon from Slate Podcasts.
So,
First, it was Dade County.
Voters in the Miami area repealed civil rights for gay people by a 2-to-1 margin.
In the late 1970s, cities around the country began rolling back anti-discrimination laws that protected gay people.
And then it was Wichita, St. Paul, Eugene.
Successful campaigns against the gay community, which shocked us all.
A state senator from California watched the laws fall and saw an opportunity.
Homosexuality is a most repulsive lifestyle.
His name was John Briggs, and he wanted to deliver the anti-gay movement its biggest prize yet.
California realized that they were coming for us.
I'm Christina Cotterucci. This season on Slow Burn, we'll explore how a nationwide backlash against gays and lesbians led to a massive showdown in California.
Now it's something called Proposition 6, the Briggs Initiative.
It would call for firing any teachers in California who practice homosexuality.
Your life as you knew it would be destroyed.
We've got to fight back. We can't let this happen in California.
The Briggs Initiative would be the first statewide vote on gay rights.
Gay rights now! Gay rights!
With so much at stake, young people became activists.
We were all coming out all day long, every day.
And activists became leaders.
My name is Harvey Milk, and I'm here to recruit you.
Slow Burn, Season 9, Gays Against Briggs. Out May 22nd, wherever you listen.
If we lose here, it'll be 50 years before we ever get back up again.
Like the drag queens say, take out the earrings, sharpen the nails, there ain't no going back.